Hey kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grunt Boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. I feel so damn lonely. Won't someone kill me? And many more.
That's right. It's the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the later years of the Simpsons. And we mean later years. We say season 11, which was about 20 years ago, but still it's 11 and beyond because other podcasts out there have discussed seasons 1 through 10 ad nauseum. This one, we don't touch those years. No, we touch the other years. We love to touch years. You know, I can't touch things alone because I'm half an annoyed grunt boy, Craig. And with me on this touching journey is...
your other half annoyed grunt boy, Steve. So what you're saying is we touch 11 and beyond, but nothing less.
Not like Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
We're talking about seasons, Steve, not ages.
There we go. Yeah.
Steve, how are we doing this week here?
Oh, remember like when everyone was like making that dumb joke about Jeffrey Epstein didn't hang himself?
Yeah, like a year ago.
And then also everyone was joking about the Tiger King. Did anybody ever do like Carol Baskin's kill Jeffrey Epstein? Because that'd be funny for like 3 seconds.
Call Lauren Michaels up. Tell him to have his cast do that.
Well, not his cast, but you know, big celebrities who aren't his cast.
Steve.
Yeah.
Did you realize that this is our 107th episode?
Whoa.
Yeah, I feel like we should play clips from previous episodes real quick. Wait, did we do this bit last week?
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's do a new bit here. What was that?
It's a new bit theme music. Oh. And maybe I accidentally hit Spotify.
Spotify is also Steve's newborn son.
That's right. You know, sometimes you hit him. It's okay. I pay for premium. No ads for my son.
Do you think that's what's going to be the future of like childbirth? Of like, you're at the hospital, like, oh, we'll deliver your baby, you know, within like 8 hours. But if you want premium birth, we have to brand them.
Yeah, we can do it in like 3.
What are we talking about, Steve?
What are we talking about?
I don't know. You know what we should talk about?
What's that?
The Simpsons.
Hey, that's a good idea. That's a show that we talk about on
that's
this show.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's talk about, before we talk about The Simpsons, let's talk about a year first.
Alrighty.
The year 2006, specifically on the date of November 19th.
What an interesting date. Hi, Craig. What was the number one movie in the box office on November 19th, 2006?
Well, a lot of people were excited to see this movie, except for, I'm going to say Eddie Murphy and Quentin Tarantino, because it wasn't what they were expecting. The number one movie was Happy Feet.
Talk about false advertising.
That's the Penguin movie, right?
Yeah.
Burgess Meredith and...
right. Danny DeVito.
Now, narrated by Morgan Freeman. Hey, he was in the Batman movies.
That's right.
I never saw Happy Feet, Steve. I'll admit it now.
Oh, boy. I didn't see it either. I don't have kids, and I don't care enough.
I mean, I wasn't expecting you to have kids in 2006.
No, that would have been weird and a bad idea, too.
Because you were single.
That's right. Takes two parents to raise a child. No, it doesn't.
Wait, Steve, it only takes two heterosexual parents to raise a child.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's get straight here.
Means a mommy and a daddy and a priest. Also, before anyone emails, I know you won't. This is a different Penguin movie, not with Morgan Freeman, but with Robin Williams and Elijah Wood and Brittany Murphy. May she rest in peace.
Oh, yeah. March of the Penguins was the Morgan Freeman one.
Yeah, this is, I think, animated thingy.
All right. Well, Steve, we were watching some Penguins with some Happy Feet.
Mm-hmm.
We were probably bopping to something, too, right?
We sure were bopping, and we are bopping to My Love, the song. By Justin Timberlake featuring T.I. I can see us holding hands, walking on the beach, our toes in the sand. I can see us on the countryside, sitting on the grassland side by side. You could be my baby, let me make you my lady. Girl, you amaze me, ain't gotta do nothing crazy. See, all I want you to do is be my love. Steve, are you a big JT fan?
I
have no problem with him.
I like that sexy back song. I think we've played it before on this podcast.
He showed up on the Jay-Z album or vice versa, but that was fun.
Yeah, and we've probably said it here before, but one of my favorite SNL cast members.
Yeah, he's great.
When's the last time he actually was on SNL?
It's probably been like a decade.
Since Andy Samberg's left, 20 years ago. Did he ever do a Brooklyn Nine-Nine show?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't believe so.
I feel like that's one of those shows that like I should watch, but I don't.
I completely agree. I think I've seen most of season one, and there's nothing wrong with it.
I love everyone. Then Chelsea Peretti, who's in it. Maybe we'll see her next week on the podcast. Perhaps. Because I like her. Everyone on that cast is great. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's Michael Shore, creator of, Parks and Rec.
Good Place.
Mm-hmm. It is a good place, Parks and Rec.
Steve, what are we watching this week?
Today we're watching Mona Lisa, or Mo and Lisa.
Mo and Lisa.
So, believing Mo to have the tormented soul of an artist, Lisa helps him discover his inner poet. Mm-hmm. But when success goes to his head and he abandons her, Homer vows revenge.
Oh, no. I kind of hope Bart also vows revenge too, but we'll see.
I mean, that would be a stretch, but maybe it'll happen.
All right. Steve, let's take a well-deserved break.
All righty. We've earned it. We'll be right back. Let me make you my lady. Girl, you amaze me. Ain't gotta do nothing crazy. See, all I want you to do. And we're back. Today we're talking about Mona Lisa, the sixth episode of the 18th season. It originally aired on November 19th, 2006. It is episode 384 in the show's run. Your nerd code is HABF19. It was written by Matt Warburton, directed by Mark Kirkland, and your showrunner is Al Jean.
Would you say Mona Lisa? Mona Lisa?
Mona Lisa.
Okay, so Matt Warburton. Hey, we've done a couple episodes with him. I think literally a couple. The last one we did was The Great Simcina.
Mm-hmm.
And Please Homer Don't Hammer Him. We did that one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Three Gays of the Condo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also wrote on a Community, and one of the big ones was a Mindy Project. And did you know he's actually producer and writer on the new Peacock Saved by the Bell reboot?
Oh, wow. I've heard good things about that.
I watched the first episode and I thought it was funny. I didn't like the Peacock app and I don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, that's basically my thing is like, one, I don't need another damn app.
Right.
And I don't know of enough programming that Peacock offers that I would actually want to watch.
It's like just watching the reruns of The Office. I think that's their biggest thing, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Like, well, we have The Office, but we have deleted scenes that you could probably get on the DVDs.
But probably showing on Comedy Central right now.
Yeah. So I'm like, I've seen The Office 300 times because it's one of my shows that, I'll just put on the background, like on Comedy Central, just to have on. So I don't, It's not a driving force for me. I mean, the Saved by the Bell, as much as I was a fan, growing up, because we're the kids of the 80s and 90s, of course we watched Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
I kind of do want to watch the new series because there's a lot of creative people behind it. And I did enjoy that first episode. I'm just going to wait till, they get Screech back on the show when he can make an appearance.
Yeah. If he makes a cameo, then I'm in.
Yeah. Because I know everyone else did, but they didn't get Screech.
He's probably too stuck up.
Dustin Diamond, come on, get off your ass and make an appearance on Saved by the Bell. Hey, everyone, it's Craig here from the 130 Simpsons Podcast and Noah Grant Boys. Steve and I recorded this episode 2 weeks before Dustin Diamond, the actor from Saved by the Bell, passed away. So we apologize for any disparaging remarks we made against Dustin Diamond.
Yes, and watch his porno. It's not bad.
He used a stunt cock, by the way. It's not his hog.
Ah, that's a shame.
It's actually Dennis Hoskins, Mr. Belding's.
I knew it looked familiar.
Oh, boy. Steve, let's get back to this episode.
It was in the bathroom at a karaoke bar one time.
All right. Well, here's the rest of the episode.
The title of this episode, Mo and Lisa, is based upon the title of Leonardo da Vinci painting, The Mona Lisa. There are other episodes that allude to the title, such as season one's Moaning Lisa, season 19's Mona Lisa, and season 22's Lona Lisa.
Steve, so, have you ever seen the Mona Lisa?
I have not. I've heard that it's small and kind of unimpressive.
That's what she said.
I set you up for that one. Yeah, Steve, because you and I go to Paris all the time to the Louvre.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of my weekend thing.
Yeah. Because you see pictures on the internet of people in there. And it's like, well, during COVID times these days, like, look at that crowd. It's like everyone's shoulder to shoulder taking selfies with our pictures. You're like, too many people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hey, Steve, the Simpsons start off with a little couch gag.
Alrighty.
Yeah, we see them in the living room, but it's like a desktop computer, like the old school, like Windows 95, right?
Yeah.
Even though this is 2006. Or no, it looks more like a old iOS operating system.
It does, yeah. It looks, yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, our cursor drags down, dropping each of the family members on their couch that they like to sit on. And it just ends with the cursor putting the family into the trash bin.
Yeah, pretty easy.
It seems like an appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, it's a fine couch gag.
Tis a fine couch gag.
Indeed.
Indeed, Anna Jones.
Our episode proper begins in the bedroom of Homer and Marge Simpson.
I'm glad you gave us the last name of Marge Simpson. I was afraid you were going to, people might think he was in bed with Marge Taylor Greene, Marjorie Taylor Greene, maybe.
That's a character that's a little too wacky even for the Simpsons.
I think I could get her as a guest on the podcast if she might be a Simpsons fan. She really likes Cartridge Family.
Yeah, one where they go to Israel because she's hoping for the space lasers.
Well, I think she actually watched History of the World Part 1 at the end of The Jews in Space. Because
mm-hmm.
she thought History of the World by Mel Brooks was actual.
So it was like a documentary series.
Yeah, she thought it was real. I guarantee it.
The Inquiry was a good show.
Not a political podcast. See, let's get back to the episode.
All right. An alarm clock rings and Homer slams it off. He rises, lets out a large yawn, and then realizes that he has a string tied around his finger. And as he puts it, I must be supposed to remember something, but what?
So Homer opens his shirt, discovers he's got a don't forget backwards written on his chest. You know, like the movie Memento.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, I never saw Memento. Is that bad?
No. Here's the thing that I've come to realize about Christopher Nolan movies in general. You see him once, you're amazed. And then that's it.
I think you're right. With the Dark Knight trilogy aside, I don't think most of them are rewatchable just because you know the twists and turns and the oohs and ahs, right?
Right. Like, I never need to see Inception again.
I don't either. I see, I've seen that one.
And I liked it.
Yeah. I haven't seen Tenet yet because I haven't seen 1 through 9 yet.
Right.
I stole your joke from many podcasts ago.
But you delivered it much more swiftly. It's much better that way.
Thanks. I'll watch Tenet eventually, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even remember the twist in Memento other than, you know, Guy forgets stuff. So Guy Ritchie.
Yeah. Well, didn't he like kill his wife or something like that?
I think that's kind of the thing.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, speaking of spoilers for movies,
mm-hmm.
Rosebud
was
actually dead the whole time. And that's how Bruce Willis could see it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so then Homer looks into the mirror to see the message he wrote for himself, you know, Memento style. And then he's awakened his memory by slamming his head to the door repeatedly. I think that works. And then he looks at a wedding photo of himself and Marge and wondering if it could be their anniversary. But, you know, he realizes that they don't have one this year.
Yeah, it's a good year.
And they do a tax joke from an episode where, no need to do my taxes. I did them last year.
But if I'm thinking forward here, yeah. So Homer heads down to the kitchen where he finds that he's written the word don't on Snowball 2, which I don't know, just makes me laugh, and the word forget on Santa's Little Helper. He then sits down next to the kitchen table, next to Maggie, who coughs up some alphabets to spell out don't forge, confusing Homer. But then the youngest Simpson coughs up the missing T. As father and daughter share a laugh, Marge rushes the family to the day's events. Could this possibly be what Homer was supposed to remember? Or will a missed phone call answer Homer's query?
How was the, that was one of my favorite scenes there, was the cuteness between Maggie and Homer.
I know, so adorable, like the way that they laugh together. Huh.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. All right, well, here's your clip, Steve.
Thank you.
Hustle your bustles, gang. We're going to the Senior Olympics to root for Grandpa.
The Senior Olympics? That's what I was supposed to remember. Oh.
Don't you dare go limp.
Too late. The deed is done.
Kids, grab a fold.
Oh, hey, Homer. I hope you didn't forget that today's our big day.
I sure am looking forward to my birthday fishing trip. Well, I'll see you soon. This is Mo. Big day. Waiting. Feeling kind of fragile. Mo, the birthday boy. Listening for your call.
Poor Mo.
Poor Mo. So sad.
Yeah, you know, you think the reveal of the Olympics, like, that doesn't make sense why Homer would have to write this down.
Yeah, I mean, Marge would just drag him anyway, so.
Yeah. It also gets me thinking, like, well, he promised Mo the fishing trip because he wanted to get out of the Senior Olympics.
Yeah.
But also it'd be really shitty if he didn't show up. You know, the kids and Marge are there. Grandpa doesn't see Homer. Just one more disappointment for Abe Simpson.
Yeah, and it's really shitty because it's his dad. Like, right. I mean, obviously it's the kid's grandpa, but like, it's not like it's Marge's parent at the Olympics, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Simpsons arrive at the Senior Olympics, and there's a banner that asks, who will break the 4-hour mile? And Grandpa is excited to finally win a gold medal because he recalls his previous missed opportunity in the Olympics, the 1936 Olympics.
I threw a javelin that barely missed Hitler. But I did hit an assassin who was trying to kill Hitler.
What is this, Kill Hitler Day?
The next time I saw Hitler, we had dinner and laughed about it.
I just like the idea, too, of Abe and Hitler just, dinner. You know, having some dinner.
Was it when he was dressed as a woman?
Yes. This is not Ina Boobies.
I wonder if there's a way we could just clip all of the World War II memories, flashbacks of Abe Simpson, put on just one, like, continuous episode.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Abe and World War II. Yeah, you'd have the fighting hellfish.
Mm-hmm.
They should make a Band of Brothers-esque TV show, but set with the hellfish.
I would watch the hell out of that.
But make it serious, too.
Yeah.
It'll be on, I was going to say HBO Max, but or Disney. So isn't there like Disney Plus Star now that is going to show the rated R stuff on Ooh. Disney Plus? Isn't that something?
I think that might be a thing, yeah.
All right. A gritty World War II Fighting Hellfish miniseries on Disney Plus coming soon.
Oh, yeah.
We could be the showrunners.
That's a bad idea, but I'll do it. So the events of the Senior Olympics are underway, with Jasper carrying the iconic torch and using a stair elevator to reach the top, igniting the ever-burning fire, as well as his own beard. In the rafters, Marge asks Lisa, what's with the line composition book? Which it just makes me laugh. I like that, like, what's with, not with the notebook, but what is with the line composition book? Because we've all had that exact same lined composition book with black and white, like, speckled cover.
Yeah, they did a great job of animating that. I still have one. Like, that's when we first started the podcast, I would write my notes in one of those.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then now I'm like, yeah, I'll just use my phone for notes.
Yeah.
So Lisa explains that her report on Fascinating Springfielders due on Monday, and that everyone she's interviewed thus far has been incredibly boring. So in her book, we have a list here, and it looks like it says we got Milhouse's dad.
Comptroller Atkins.
Gil.
Very tall man.
And a squeaky teen voice. I would, out of those, you know, Gil has had so many jobs. How could she not pull from that?
Yeah.
I mean, Comptroller Atkins, I don't know much about.
No, I mean, he is probably pretty boring. And I feel like Kirk, you know, we could talk about his music career.
Right.
And, you know, very tall man. You know, he bought a Volkswagen once. That's fascinating.
Squeaky T, he hasn't really lived his life that much. So
yeah,
he could probably talk about all the Karens that come into Krusty Burger not wearing masks and he has to tell them to leave. And then they're videoing him and putting it on TikTok.
It's just door policy, ma'am.
You know, they're going to be making those parodies in The Simpsons like next season.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to post-COVID TV about COVID.
I'm hoping they just don't do it.
That's my hope, too, because this is going to be a bummer. Like, we get through it and, you know, only 600,000 people died or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we're nowhere near the end. But then we have to deal with it for the next year in media. It's like, ugh.
I think the only show that allow it to be addressed would be Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's fine.
I would do plot lines where, like, in the beginning days, you know, when they were saying, like, don't buy N95 masks. Those are for hospital workers, essential workers. I can see an episode where Larry, like, buys a whole stock of N95 masks. Mm-hmm. He gets in trouble for it.
Yeah, everybody calls him an asshole.
Yeah, he hoards all the hand sanitizer and toilet paper.
All right, hey, I'm down for that.
Yeah. But don't, I don't need a Goldberg's episode, which takes place in the 80s, dealing with COVID-19.
Exactly.
Back to The Simpsons. Lenny offers himself as a subject because he collects Absolute Vodka ads, but he's stunned to find out when he learns there's more than just one.
What?
Yeah. So the Olympics continue. Homer and Marge look on as the old Jewish man, whose first appearance, by the way, was actually in Moaning Lisa, struggles to climb up the top of the diving board. And once on top, he jumps with his arms flapping around and the Rocky and Bullwinkle flying squirrel theme plays. I thought that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
He soars and lands on his feet by the pool.
Yeah, I also thought it was funny that he didn't actually take a dive into the pool. He just yeah. Marge comments that they have to sit through 72 events and Grandpa's yet to win a medal. Bart points out that Hans Bollmann is making matters worse by using his robotic legs to do the long jump.
So Abe and the rest of the old timers are getting ready to do the hurdles. If you look to Abe's right there, the guy in glasses with a cool little hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's President Biden.
I would say yes, but they made him look a little young.
And to Abe's left, I think that was actually Joe Biden in 1974. He's just racing all the Bidens, I guess.
Yes, he's riding with Biden.
So anyways, at the hurdles, Abe starts out poorly and he struggles to keep up and his dentures fall out. And groundskeeper Willie's there and he's using a Sith to, you know, attend to the grounds like you would do because he doesn't have a lawnmower. But it's about to rain and he puts on his black poncho and as the Scottish janitorial worker sees the fallen denture, he grabs him and chases after Grandpa. And you'll believe this, Steve, he mistakes him for the Grim Reaper.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thinking he's being chased by the specter of death, Grandpa picks up the pace and rushes to the finish line, handily defeating his elderly opponents. But you know what, Craig? I think I have a blunder.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, because during the scene that we just watched, Grandpa's teeth can be seen in his mouth, even though Willie is holding them.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Crazy, 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 Steve. Well, the family congratulates Abe, who offers up Bart to Willie as a soul freshener. I thought it was a funny scene there. In the medal ceremony, Willie, the Green Reaper, has won the bronze, which is fun because, you know, he was chasing after him.
Yeah.
Grandpa takes the gold, and he's never been happier. The band plays the Star Spangled Banner, and he yells to turn that hippie crap off. That was great.
I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
So as the Simpson family drive home, Marge wonders if the dog thought of them when they were gone, which I thought was cute.
Yeah, another cute line, yeah.
And they near the house and they see Mo sitting on the doorstep, equipped with fishing gear. Suddenly, Homer remembers that what he was supposed to not forget. It wasn't 9/11, but that he was supposed to take Mo fishing for his birthday. Now, the trope of the sad person... Like, the trope of somebody supposed to take somebody fishing and then not, and sitting on the doorstep sad, is that an actual trope or is it a thing that they just did on this and Arrested Development?
I'm going to assume it probably goes back to, like, Andy Griffith or something. I never watched the show, but it seems like...
That would make sense.
Andy would, like, promise Opie he's going to take him fishing to the fishing hole and he's got to...
And somebody shot up Mayberry and handed it over.
Yeah, he's got to deal with, like, school shootings and stuff like that.
There's a person of color in town.
Right. Again, never watched Andy Griffith the show, but I'm just assuming that's probably that trope.
Yeah, I know that they have a town drunk, a bartender, and Barney Fife.
Stay tuned for Stephen Craig's Adventures in Mayberry, a podcast coming soon to Stitcher Premium.
That's right.
We're not going to do it, but someone else named Stephen Craig will probably do it.
Yep. Hey, Barry, it's Mayberry.
Hey, Barry, it's Mayberry. That's a great title. Now I want to do it. I'm in.
Okay.
I'm just going to wait till they... colorize it and put it on 4K.
Yeah.
Then we'll watch it.
Or the gritty new reboot.
Oh, yeah. It'll be Andy played by a woman of color.
Rashida Jones. What are you doing in Mayberry?
No, I want to watch it.
I know. That sounds like a fun show. She should have her own sitcom. Angie Tribeca was really good.
That was a great show. Maybe back to the Subtron show. Do you ever think that, too, by the way, with Marge ponders about the dog?
Mm-hmm.
You ever think about that? Like, if your cat's like, I wonder if they miss us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure Milo does, because when he comes home, when I come home, he usually says hi to me, and then he uses my legs as a scratching post. So either he missed me, or he just wants to scratch my legs.
I know. When we would go out of town and come back, you know, a couple days later, the cat used to just, like, yell at us, like, meow, 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 meow. Like, how could you leave me? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm. Why'd you come back?
All right. So the family all ducks down in the car. So Mo sees that Homer's home, but really, it's not, just their car is coming home. So the vehicle smashes into the neighbor's trash can and they get in the backyard. So the kids sneak in the back door and sadly Mo sings happy birthday to himself, ending the song with he wished that someone would kill him.
Sure.
I mean, that's
how we feel like that on her birthday.
I was just gonna say, yeah.
Yeah. So as afternoon turns to early evening, Mo peeks into the window of 742 Evergreen Terrace, hoping to catch a glimpse of his forgetful friend. Inside the house, the family is eating dinner by scuttling like crabs. Marge tells her husband that they can't maintain this lifestyle for much longer, but Homer shows how easy it is by making a salad and then scuttling over to the microwave to get a bag of popcorn, which is kind of weird to have salad and popcorn together.
I guess, yeah.
But Bart and Homer fight over the bag of popcorn. Then Homer falls on his back and struggles to right himself when suddenly a brick flies through the window.
Dear Pussbag.
Whoa, Marge, who'd you piss off?
It's for you, Pussbag! Birthdays never meant squat to me. Then you offered to take me fishing. And like a stumble-bum chump, I dared to hope. But you shattered my dreams like a duff tall boy in a bar brawl. And you jammed a jagged neck right up my heart's butt. I guess I just wasn't meant to be happy. Or handsome. Or anything, really.
Oh, what a deep, tormented soul.
Loser!
Mo, you have a worldview, both bleak and beautiful. I want to write a report about you.
Wow, for the first time in my life, someone's taken a genuine interest in what's inside of me. Suddenly, this is my best birthday ever.
Before we continue on, Steve, have you ever done the thing where they did earlier, you're home, but you don't want people to know you're home, so you do, like, hide?
Oh, yeah. I've done it a lot in my life, actually.
It sucks, too, when, like, there's actually lights on.
Yeah.
When that occasion when there's, like, no lights on.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, like, TV or stereo, and they're just, like, knocking on the door, like, yeah, I'm not here. Hiding.
I remember one time I was renting a house with some people, but I wasn't on the lease. And so the landlord came and I had to hide in my bedroom for like an hour. And it was the wrong time to drink like 32 ounces of soda or whatever. Jeez. I just remember I really had to pee and I couldn't do anything.
Were they like in the house like inspecting something or?
Yeah.
And so you're just like in your room, like hopefully they don't walk in.
Right. Into this room that's not supposed to be rented.
Did you hide in the closet, Steve?
I was in the closet, yeah.
Man, it's kind of great, actually, with COVID. No one's going around knocking, like, telemarketers. What are the versions of telemarketers that...
Like door-to-door salesmen.
There we go. Like Mormons. Door-to-door people, like, yeah, religious people, like, knocking on your door, like, you just kind of, like, hide.
Oh, yeah.
I know I had someone once come over I didn't want it to, like, hang out with, and I just kind of, like, hid in my bedroom, which made sure they weren't there.
Yeah. I think when I was a kid, I used to actually tell my mom to lie for me. And she's like, okay.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
That, you probably wanted your space. And that's what parents are supposed to do.
Exactly. That's all it wanted.
Yeah. It was one of my favorite visual gags coming up here. So lightning strikes a tree, causing a limb to fall on Sandal's little helper's doghouse. And it startles him. And he jumps and bites Mo's arm like he puts. The bartender feels that this is still his top three of birthdays. And then another lightning bolt flashes and it hits a bird's nest, robin's nest probably, right?
I think so.
Sure. Right. And then the nest lands on Mo's head and the two babies inside those eggs crack and die. So now he's got dripping baby flesh on his face. And the mom comes and pecks at him because she's pissed off because her kids are dead. But Mo still says it's one of his top 10 birthdays of all time.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And yeah, the way that you describe that, eggs are weird and gross.
Yeah, but they're yummy.
They are, until they're not. I go through waves of eggs.
Actually, I think we do too. Like, I haven't had like actual eggs in a while.
It's like sometimes we'll be like, yeah, that sounds really good. Let's have eggs. And then I'm just like, ugh, they just sound gross.
And also like when someone else is cooking them and you're not going to eat them, the smell of cooking eggs is gross.
It really is.
Yeah. All right. I think we've talked about that before.
Our second act begins with Homer and Lisa following Mo to his abode. The bartender doesn't understand why Lisa would want to do a report about him. After all, he ain't no great man like Bob Seger or Haystacks Calhoun. And in case you're wondering, Bob Seger was an American singer-songwriter. And as we all know, Haystack Calhoun was an American wrestler who came in at about 601 pounds.
I'm glad they got that 1 pound in.
Yes.
He's still with us, right?
I believe that he died.
Oh, okay.
I think he died in like 1984.
Oh, no, the year Ghostbusters came out?
I know. It was his dying wish to see Slimer.
But he became Slimer.
Yep, old Onion Head himself.
Now we all know James Belushi's Onion Head.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Lisa says that she sees another soul's deep inside Mo, and they arrive at Mo's home, which is actually a dilapidated Regent Hotel with the buzziest neon sign in town, Steve. Homer's impressed that Mo lives in a hotel, but as they soon see, it's not as ritzy as one may imagine.
Mo, you live in a hotel? You're just like Eloise.
Did someone say my name?
This vibrating massage chair feels great.
That ain't a massage chair. It's just full of cockroaches. See?
Hmm. Wow. Mo, these fragments are fascinating.
I was in the Christmas pageant once. Mom showed up with a new boyfriend. He called me Steve.
Oh. What you've got here is poetry.
Oh, Mo's a poet. He has a soul. Flutter your wings. It's tea time in Buttercup Junction.
Go, go, go.
Mo's the princess of Lollipop Land.
Go, go, go.
He lunches on lavender and potpourri.
Go, go, go.
Seriously, Mo, I think you have a gift.
Thanks, Homer. I love you, man.
Ooh, you love a man.
So for those who didn't see that clip because you're listening to an audio medium, Homer was prancing around and he fell out the window and down the fire escape, hitting each step on the way down.
I like how Homer says, ooh, you love him on. You know who else loves him on?
David Bowie.
Yeah, there we go.
So
David Bowie.
That's right. Man, will 2016 never end?
It's the worst.
Some of the notes, I can't imagine anything worse than what happened in that year. Because we lost Prince, David Bowie, and George Michael.
Did Robin Williams die in?
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. It was a bad year.
What about Alan Rickman? That was, I think, the next year.
Yeah.
All our favorites just gonna die because that's how life works and aging. But, of course, they were kind of young.
Yeah, it's Tom a shame.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, speaking of bleak things.
Maybe Fyfish Finkel, too.
Oh, that's that one hurt.
Ava Gota, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I used to follow him on tour because, you know, I love to see fish.
All right, let's get back to the Simpsons team.
All right. So some of the notes on Mo's wall read, eyeball screams, broken pipe.
There's one that says, liver fights kidney. Who wins? No one.
I like that one. So Lisa takes Mo's fragmented notes, prepares to arrange them into an epic poem, not unlike T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland. And we see a few more of Mo's notes, which read,
my tooth aches from chewing.
The covered life to know.
Reeks like garbage.
Rusted fly eggs.
But Mo's impressed with Lisa's ability to make sense of his ramblings. So Lisa brings Mo to school to show off his poetic talent.
Whoa, my brain goo's coming out all artistical, thanks to you.
How about this for a title? Howling at a Concrete Moon.
That's a terrific title. It jumps out at you like a rat in your underwear drawer. Oh, we make a great team there, Lisa. My soul smells like a dead pigeon after 3 weeks. I shut my window and go to sleep. In my dream, I eat corn with my eyes.
Philistines. Lisa, I'm sorry you got a bad grade on your Mo and Tell.
I don't care about my grade. I'm going to send Mo's poem to American Poetry Perspectives.
Do not mention that publication in this house. They never published my poem. There once was a rapping tomato. That's right, I said rapping tomato. He rapped all day from April to May. And also, guess what? It was me.
Homer's poem was great.
Loved it. I also love the horrified reaction to Mo's poem from the children and Marge's nonplussed reaction to the rapping tomato poem.
It was her annoyed grunt. Well, anyways, we head to the American Poetry Perspectives building. In the office of one of the higher floors, a familiar-looking editor is using a stamp to mark a large red no on a poetic entry. One of his lackeys bursts in the door, saying that the submission is already entered from a brilliant poem no one's ever heard of. So let's check out the editor's response.
Genius! Pay him nothing and run it on the cover! Stop the presses, send my wife some flowers, and bring me an Advil. What do you mean you don't work for me? You're hired. Now that you're hired, you're fired. Now that you don't work here, we can be friends. Now that we're friends, how come you never call? Some friend you are! God, I love this business.
Here it is.
Bad news, Maya Angelou, you've been bumped.
Oh, no, you know you can't bump me. I don't know that's gonna hot move you. Why don't you just enjoy? I can't believe you. Enjoy. Out of a matter.
Mo, you're a published author.
Well, just think. Earlier tonight, a newly published poet cleaned up my bath. Most Tavern. Who? Where? To what? Screw you, Snail Trail.
Who is that?
Some jerk making a prank call with a gag name. Tom Wolf.
Tom Wolf? He wrote The Right Stuff and Bonfire of the Vanities and coined the phrase radical chic.
Wait. Then that guy wasn't squeezing my roids when he invited me to the Wordlow Festival in Vermont?
Couple things in that clip there.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get J.J. Jameson.
Yes, played by Just Kidding Simmons.
In the DC universe, he's a Jim Gordon.
Oh, really? Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Huh.
I love a J.K. Simmons. If you haven't seen Whiplash, you gotta see that one.
Yeah, it's great. And as I may have mentioned on the show before, I'm a bit of a webhead.
Mm-hmm.
I love me some Spider-Man, and I do enjoy J. Jonah Jameson. He's one of my favorite characters, and I think that J.K. Simmons' portrayal of him is perfect.
I think it's one of those like comic book performances that like there's no one else that could be J.J. Jameson.
Yes, like, and it's just so good, and this clip just encapsulates what makes it so good.
Right.
Also, Maya Angelou.
That was probably one of my favorite things. The mind actually just like, I mean, I know it was all gibberish, but like you just imagine her just like cursing up a storm and just mm-hmm. like the complete opposite of Maya Angelou. I love that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes. I know it's like it's a goofy scene, you know, it's supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
and it's a pop culture thing, but I enjoyed it. I bet in the time like when this came out, I probably been like, oh, this is too Family Guy. They're doing a cutaway, but I enjoyed it. So
me too. So some trivia for you, Craig. The mm-hmm. Wordloaf Convention is a reference to the Breadloaf Writers Conference held every year at the Breadloaf campus of Middlebury College. And several Simpsons writers have attended Middlebury, and other references to the show exist, including one in which a criminal Snake Jailbird is identified as a Middlebury alumnus.
Oh, Steve, you didn't need to tell me that. I go every year.
It's great. I love when they talk about
bread.
Yeah.
Yeah. And loaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And buries.
And being in the middle.
Yeah, that TV show, The Middle, with the guy from Scrubs.
Yeah, the janitor.
Yeah. He has a name. Lisa convinces Mo to attend the literary convention, provided that she goes with him, but because he wouldn't be invited if not for Lisa. So the phone rings again, and this time it's Milhouse calling. And I love the way that Mo is like, oh, hi, Milhouse. Like, he calls all the time. And then Lisa just tells the bartender, like, nonchalantly, like, oh, that she's not there.
It's funny, too, that one, Milhouse calls the bar frequently.
Yeah.
And B, that Lisa's just hanging out at Mo's.
Yeah, there was a callback, not a callback, but there was another reference to like everyone knows Milhouse, I think, from a few podcasts ago where even Mr. Burns knows who Milhouse is.
Yeah.
It was like how like this town of Springfield now just decided that Milhouse is the butt of the joke. Like everyone knows who Milhouse is.
Yeah, everyone hates Milhouse.
He's a dumb wiener
kid. Yeah, nobody really likes him. Stupid wiener kid.
Yeah.
So the Simpsons are going to Vermont with the family bartender. What could be better? As they drive beneath the changing leaves, Mo passes Homer a Dove and asks him, how's it going, in his usual bartender fashion. Homer replies that he's lousy, as he has to go to Vermont for a stupid poetry thing. And then as Homer takes a sip, Marge stops him, saying that he shouldn't drink and drive. Homer makes a compromise, though, and agrees to drive between sips, which is a real move that my dad used to do. He used to say, I'm not driving drunk. I'm driving while I'm drinking. Yeah.
I even felt like this scene, like, what year is this episode? 2006?
Mm-hmm.
Even it seems like too controversial to like make this kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't Marge just volunteer to drive?
That seems like an easy thing. Like they can have some road sodas in the back seat, but yeah.
Anyway, so Mo and the Simpsons stop and go through the scenic Vermont, and they arrive at the Wordloaf Literary Conference, where a banner warns that Philip Roth may be moody.
Ooh.
See, why would Philip Roth be moody?
I think he's known to be a curmudgeon.
Are you saying an author would be a curmudgeon?
Believe it or not, there are a couple who are less than gregarious. Yeah.
An angry author. Well, I never. Anyways, Homer drunkly falls out of the car and he hopes for an open bar. And then suddenly the state troopers from every New England state arrive, including Rhode Island, who's got a little tricycle. Looks like a little fella, too. The diminutive offer says they're a small state, but they give out big tickets.
What do you think about that joke?
I think the whole concept of like, oh, Rhode Island, so small state. Who cares?
I don't know. It's just weird to have like a little person on a tricycle.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I know they're trying to be cute, but
just because it's a small state, then they're all,
yeah.
You know who was really offended by that joke?
Who's that?
Me, Peter Griffin.
Oh, Peter, from Quahog.
Yeah, Quahog, Rhode Island. One of these days, I'm going to get back at that Homer.
Well, you did in that awful episode that you did, the crossover thing that you did.
That hasn't happened yet.
Fuck all right, Peter. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to fight a chicken.
That'll be funny and short. Outside the convention, Bart informs a number of stuffy authors that the Da Vinci Code just sold 100 million copies. This causes the writers to scream and hit themselves with their own books, and that elicits a chuckle from Bart.
So inside the event, Mo meets his literary peers, including Tom Wolfe. See, he's not a wolf, by the way.
Oh,
yeah. Who's wearing one of his trademark white suits, which Mo uses as a napkin.
It's Tom Wolfe. He uses more exclamation points than any other major American writer.
It's true.
How you doing there, Mo Sizlak?
Ah, magnificent Mo. He stands, stoop-shouldered, blinking in the light. Hollow-chested like a dough-faced fall guy who's made a career of taking dives, but has decided to get his manhood out of hock and take a shot at the title, or at least go for the jaw, and thwack! Hyper-extend the champ's pterygordius before kissing the mat goodnight.
You ever scrub your hands real fast and you think you're seeing a third one? One time I looked down and there really was. I gotta get a new lock for that bathroom.
Mo, your debut poem is refreshing as a second pair of socks on a wet hike. I must know how you came up with that brilliant title.
Steve, did you know that Tom Wolfe was previously in the season 12 episode Insane Clown Poppy?
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't really, I mean, just a drawing. It wasn't speaking.
Yeah, I did enjoy the animation of between Homer and Tom, or not Homer, but Mo and Tom Wolfe, the way that Mo uses his jacket as a napkin to wipe off whatever he ate. And then Tom just kind of looks at him angrily. I thought that was fun.
I never read a Tom Wolfe book. Steve, I haven't really read any books. I've been watching The Simpsons too much. I get all my culture references from them.
I mean, if you have to pick a show to like glean everything from, I think that's the best one to do.
I never saw Bonfire of the Vanities nor read the book. Nope. I know Right Stuff is a good book and a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Tom Wolfe, he died, by the way.
I think what we're learning from this podcast in general is that you and I haven't seen anything other than The Simpsons.
Yeah. Or read anything.
Yeah.
We're not well learned.
Nope. Learned, Lisa. Learned.
All right. Pepsi. Well, Steve, speaking of the Tom Wolfe, he's eager to learn where Mo came up with the title Howling at a Concrete Moon. And Lisa looks on intently. No,
that's true.
So initially, Mo tells the crowd that he had help with the title, but the literary folks gasp at the thought of needing assistance coming up with the name of something. But another famous writer who's kissed more boys than me, Steve, offers some support.
Well, so have I, Gore Vidal. 1876 was the price I paid for gas once. I thought of Burr when I saw it written on an Eskimo pie package.
I can't believe it!
Those sound like terrible jokes!
Sir, I must ask you to pick up your gift bag and leave this festival.
I don't need your sycophantic laughter. I have some on tape. You still love me, Temple University class of 1987.
I like that clip a lot.
I love the Gore Vidal appearance, yeah.
Yeah, and also the people in the crowd, like, those sound like terrible jokes. So as the boy kissing author grabs his gift bag that has a stuffed giraffe in it for some reason, the focus returns to Mo and how he arrived at the title of his epic poem. And Lisa looks on again with hope in her eyes, and the sleazy bartender changes his story and says that he thought of the title on his own, like a real writer. This shocks and disgusts Lisa. And Mo and the other writers head to the hayride as Black Eyed Peas' Let's Get Started in Here plays. Lisa cries, saying that they're a team, while the authors ride back and forth, playing the music of Fergie, Will.i.am, and that other guy. Apple D. Apple? Is that his name?
I don't know.
Okay.
I did like that one album they had that had that song on it.
I'm not familiar with the works of Black Eyed Peas, to be fair. I know that one song, and I know it has a problematic original title, and that's about all I know.
I love the fact that there was the gift bag had some weird stuffed giraffe. At first, I thought it was like Joffrey, the Toys R Us giraffe.
That's what I thought too.
And then they all take this like hayride together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's for inspiration.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with that. But I love this little retreat here. Anyways, our third act begins with the literary convention continues with the marquee outside of the word loaf says today's panel, writers on writing. Tomorrow's panel, janitors on janiting. A little wordplay there. And inside the panel of the esteemed authors is being introduced by Tom Wolfe himself.
I'd like to introduce our panel, Jonathan Franzen, Michael Chabon, and Mo.
Whoa, Clearwater, swanky, woohoo!
Now we'll open the floor to fawning praise and obvious questions.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for your brilliant work. Yes, yes. My question is, who are your biggest influences?
I'd have to say my good friend Jonathan Franzen. I thought his novel, The Corrections, needed none.
Chabon!
Well, in turn, I'd have to say my biggest influence is Albert Camus.
You were supposed to say me. I blurbed you.
Yeah, and it looks real sweet on my dust jacket. How do you like me now?
Franzen!
Mo, who inspired you to become a writer? Jack Kerouac? Charles Bukowski? Me? Tom Wolfe?
Well, I don't know. The only book I ever read was Superhounds, The Ultimate Greyhound Betting System. So, any of you wet naps write that?
So, Steve, you're somewhat of a bookworm.
Sure.
Are you fans of the Chabon or the Franzen?
I really enjoy Michael Chabon. The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay is a great book that actually I think you'd enjoy. It kind of talks about the beginnings of the comic book industry, and it's a lot of fun. And I tried to read The Corrections and I hated it by Jonathan Franzen. It's rich people being sad in a family setting. It probably goes deeper into that, but that's all I got out of it. So I didn't finish it.
Did you know Michael Chabon was part of the writing team for the Star Trek Picard series?
Oh.
Yeah.
He also wrote on Spider-Man 2.
So that's considered one of the best of the superhero movies.
Yeah, I know. So he's pretty good.
Yeah, but we don't like Dennis Franz. Is that what we're saying?
I didn't like to see his butt.
All right. I love the when Tom Wolfe in the beginning was like obvious questions from the audience. I feel bad for any artist, you know, getting the, you know, questions and answers. It's always the same thing. Like, yeah, who are your influences? Big one. Like, will you do a sequel to this thing that you did?
Yeah. Did you like working with this person? Yes, of course.
Where do you get your inspiration?
Well, I look at you and I do the opposite.
Are you talking to me?
Yes. No, but, that's why I'm such a failed writer, because you're so inspirational.
Thanks.
Yeah.
But I love that fan and the audience there.
Yeah. So the audience laughs at Mo's clip, but Lisa stands up and confronts Mo, saying that there must be someone, possibly in that very room, that believed him when no one else did. Mo responds by saying that he sees what she's implying, but can't think of anyone. And Tom Wolfe dismisses the Q&A session with a bang of his gavel, which he has for some reason.
I do like Mo there, like, oh yeah, I get what you're getting at.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, but I see.
Yeah. So Lisa's, she sadly walks outside. She's met by her family, who are eager to go Vermonting. And she declines the offer of the sightseeing. You know, she doesn't think that she'll be a good company. So Homer thanks her for the heads up, and the rest of the family head on out.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be any fun to hang out with. All right. See you later.
Hey, she's being honest. And he's like, all right, you made a point. Bye.
Yeah. Some real emotional honesty there. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So Homer and Joey's driving on covered bridges as they're like driving through little houses. And as the Vermonter on the hood of Homer's car points out, he actually also drove through that guy's house. Homer apologizes and says that they should exchange insurance information, and then says, I have none.
I thought that seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Just like the, and I have none. All right. Well, Lisa suddenly tossing breadcrumbs at eager geese. And even more eager grad students who aren't allowed to eat until they grade 3,000 papers. Their professor whips them back to the classroom, and Mo finds our little Lisa.
Hey, there you are. I've been looking for you. I need a brilliant new poem for the farewell dinner. So if you could turn these into one of those, and then don't say nothing while I take all the credit, I'd really appreciate it. Though I'd never admit that. And look, I got you started. Huh? Huh?
Mo, you're a heartless jerk.
Huh? Whoa, where did that come from? Oh, right, my actions. Well, let's see if I can put this poem together. Hey! Stupid geese, you're eating my brilliance! Hey, I break your beak! What? Hey! Look at me. It's supposed to be my big triumph, and I'm standing in mud fighting with geese. Well, if I'm gonna fight, I might as well win. Yeah, go on, you cowards. Fly off in a V.
Some great Mo stuff in that clip there.
Yeah.
The beginning there with thinking what he did is like, oh, yeah, my actions.
And just pulling a gun on some geese is very funny.
Hey, you know what? I'm for the Second Amendment, but, you know, in certain things, we're going to get a political podcast. I'm not all about automatic rifles. But I'm fine with Mo trying to shoot geese. Those people are jerks. When I say people, I mean geese.
You mean, yeah. People. They're the worst people ever.
Yeah. Those birds are real dicks.
Yeah, in the animal kingdom, there are few animals more jerky than the goose.
And I love dark meat, so I'd be happy to eat a goose because they're all dark meat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want for Christmas. Ebenezer Scrooge throwing a coin at me to buy the biggest goose. I'm going to keep it for myself and not give it to him or the Cratchits. Fuck them and their little Tiny Tim piece of shit.
Yeah, take a gander at that. Gander.
Yeah, I get it.
That's all I had. So Lisa's sitting outside a log cabin when the rest of the family returns. Parks learned so much about the Green Mountain State, particularly that candles are made by Luthers. The family also went to the Vermont teddy bear factory, which we actually mentioned a long time ago, where Homer got stuffed bears in the likeness of Lisa and Mo. Aww. The bears cause Lisa to cry, and Homer tries to comfort her by telling his daughter that the toys aren't made from real bears, just their fur and their noses.
So you know how we do on the podcast that there are wrap-up like t-shirts or tattoos,
mm-hmm,
or other products. I've already decided that you're going to want a Mo teddy bear.
I mean, it's pretty damn awesome.
I think I want the Mo teddy bear too.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'd go over Mo. I'd go with him over Lisa.
Yeah.
So he's got a little apron. I don't need him to be embroidered as his Mo, but you know.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fun scene though. Anyways, Lisa between tears tells her dad that Mo marginalized her contributions, and that causes both Homer and Bart for some reason to gasp. Kind of like how Bart gets pissed off too.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, so Lisa runs off crying, and Homer vows that no one makes her daughter sob and run, and Bart angrily states that Mo ruined Lisa's first word loaf.
Oof.
The fun play on words.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that Bart is concerned for his sister. Yeah. So later that evening, the convention continues. As a sign states, tonight, Wordloaf honors Mo Szyslak, best new poet. Warning, first 10 rows may get wit. That's one of those jokes that are very literary,
yep,
but not that funny, but that makes it that much funnier.
Yeah.
You know, like when you hear an NPR joke and it's just like, oh, they farted. That's it.
Steve, I don't listen to NPR.
Sorry, a Fox News joke. There you go.
Thank you. Steve, I don't listen to OAN Network's podcast. I'm sure they have one.
I'm sure they do, and I'm sure it's god-awful. Like, I know that we know bad podcasts, but man, I can only imagine the shit that they do.
Hey, Steve, we're actually going to be on their network, so...
So I love the OAN Network. They have some innovative and truthful advertising and promotions that are good, and I hate myself.
Continue.
Inside, Mo struggles with his own sadness while being among the happiest people in the world, writers. Tom Wolfe stakes claim on unfinished garlic mashed potatoes.
Mm.
And as the crowd brings their plates to table one to be collected later, Mo tries to recreate poetic magic.
This here poem is called Elevator Capacity. Elevator capacity, 2,400 pounds. Inspection certificate available in hotel manager's office.
You just pulled that off the wall of the elevator.
Yeah, well, here's another one you might like. Channel 61, family favorites. Channel 62, adult desires. Channel 63, in-room checkout. Hey, you know what? I got a different poem for you. Ode to Lisa, pointy-headed mini-muse. More friend than I deserved. You pulled me from the dirt and made me the beautiful flower that I am. But some flowers can stab you in the back, for which I should send you flowers. Which I will, but they were closed. You'll be getting them tomorrow.
Oh, Mo.
Lisa, if you could just forgive me, you would make me the happiest man in Vermont. Except for those two dudes I saw getting hitched. Not my thing, but I wish them well.
Before this clip was played, I love the scene where Mo, for some reason, just picks up the Cornish game hand with the fork and just starts chewing at it.
Yeah, that's funny.
Also, who is the, when Tom Wolfe is speaking before he introduces Mo in the beginning,
mm-hmm,
there's on the dais to his left, there's an author on the panel there with a bag over his head with a question mark. Who's that supposed to be?
That happens to be a reclusive author, Thomas Pynchon.
Mm.
And he first appeared in season 15's Diatribe of a Mad Housewife. And then once again in season 16's All's Fair in Oven War.
I thought it was Homer. Remember that episode with Homer was doing the...
He was like the internet detective. He was like...
Yeah, but didn't he have a paper bag with a question mark over his?
You're totally right. I forgot about that.
But yours is actually probably right. So, yeah. Anyways, so just then Homer and Bart appear and the rafters ready to get revenge on the bartender by pouring some maple syrup on him with a giant bottle. And that sticky goo slowly oozes out. Yeah. But Lisa shouts that she's not mad at Mo anymore. So Mo asks Homer if it would make him happy if any of the syrup hit him. But Homer says, not anymore. So Mo walks away, leaving the syrup to continue to drip. And hated authors Michael Chabon and Jonathan Franzen continue their feud. And the episode wraps up by revisiting the editor of the Daily Bugle. Well, maybe not the Bugle in this instance.
It's true.
Wow, you couldn't make this stuff up.
Well, you couldn't.
That's it, Franzen. I think your nose needs some corrections. Ow! Ow! Oh, you fight like Anne Rice!
Well, Mo, I guess we're friends again.
That's great. Now, what do you say we do some regional duck pin bowling?
I'd like that. I'd like it a lot.
Aw, that's sweet. I hate sweet. I need photos. Photos of Spider-Man.
This is a poetry journal.
Okay, then poems about Spider-Man. And I want to finish before you start. And before you finish, give me some coffee. And the poem should have the following rhyme scheme. A-B-B-A-A-B-B-A-C-D-E-C-D-E. What are you waiting for, Chinese New Year?
Guess our episode wraps up tightly there, right?
Yep. Some little trivia for you. The rhyming scheme that he mentions is Petrachan, an Italian sonnet style dating back to the 13th century. And the quote, "What are you waiting for, Chinese New Year?" is from Spider-Man 3.
That's everyone's favorite Spider-Man.
Yes, and it's unfairly maligned, in my opinion.
They just had too many villains in it.
Yeah, and I know the emo Spider-Man thing. But
that's the best part of the movie.
It was a lot of fun. I laughed at it.
It's a comic book, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Comic book movies should have funny moments because they're comic books.
Mm-hmm. It should be a little silly.
Yeah. We're not...
He's a man spider. It's already goofy. All of his villains are animals. Yeah. Vulture, rhino, lizard.
Sandman.
Exactly. All animals.
Man's an animal.
Exactly.
Chameleon. Yep. There you go.
Dr. Octopus. Man-wolf.
Craven. I mean, he's a hunter.
He's a hunter of animals.
Anyways, we get a post-credit scene a la Marvel, speaking of Spider-Man.
That's true.
And Homer is doing some syrup taste testing. It sounds really gross, but he's tasting like the pancake topper. Thought of a fine wine, Steve.
Oh.
And he compliments the sleigh on the label, the rich maple color, the good swirl, and then taps a sip and makes several odd noises, like I said. If you've ever been to a wine tasting, it's pretty accurate, I guess.
It's gross, too. I used to have to do a lot of wine tasting in a former job, and when I do it with other people, they'd always just make really gross noises with their mouth to, like, really swirl it in there. And I don't know, just, like, taste the wine, dude. Just
Get drunk. Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
That's what we drink alcohol, not for, like, alcohol in general just tastes gross.
Yeah, and the nuance of wine is just, it's not worth it, man.
No. You could put an 800 bottle of wine in front of me next to a $10 bottle of wine. I guarantee you, I wouldn't be like, this is amazing and this is crap. I'd be like, yeah, this is good. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, I find that the red pairs really well with the white.
Sure. Even though they had the joke of the syrup and the wine tasting. I mean, there is a huge difference between, like, really authentic or good tasting maple syrup. Because, like, as a kid growing up, it was like, you know, Aunt Jemima or just crappy store brand syrup. And, like, this is what syrup's supposed to taste like. And then we actually, like, go out and splurge and buy, like, an expensive bottle of maple syrup. You're like, holy shit.
It's a world of difference. It's true.
Yeah. You're like, don't give me that processed bullshit ever.
Yeah, it's so gross when you, like, once you make the change. Yeah, that other stuff, the corn syrup stuff, it sucks. Ugh. Yeah, splurging on a nice bottle of syrup is definitely worth it.
Because also that expensive syrup will go a long way. Whereas, like, you take, like, the crappy, like, store brand or even, like, the, like, it's just Butterworth now, right? It's not Mrs.
Yeah, I think she's single now.
Okay. It's so runny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you realize, like, the syrup needs to be, like, a thick, viscous, you know, syrup.
Yeah.
The little amount that you use goes a long way.
It's true.
It's like I'm saying, like with the crappy store brand, like the processed corn syrup stuff you're saying, like that's just like you have to put half a bottle on just like one silver dollar pancake just to get some flavor.
Yeah. It's slime.
Yeah. It's slime.
It's slime. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, well, that's our syrup talk for this week. Should we end the podcast now or should we talk about syrup and take a break?
Let's continue our talk on the break and then we'll come back and move on to compotes.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
We'll be right back.
Oh, Jemima.
Alrighty, Craig, we're back. Let's finish up our discussion of Mo and Elisa. We'll talk about our favorite visual things, our MBJ, our favorite quotes. What we want on a t-shirt or merchandise, which I think we've already established. And we'll give her reviews and find out what we're watching next week.
All right. What do you want Alrighty. First?
What are some of the visual aspects of this show or this episode that you enjoyed?
Well, I like the aspect ratio because it was still at the 4:3.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
We alluded to, I said that you would like the Mo and Lisa Vermont teddy bear, that you'd like that. What struck me visually, originally it was how cute Maggie was with Homer in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That was cute. But I think visually speaking, for like something on a t-shirt or tattoo, I just love the image of Santa's little helper, like just gagging on Mo's arm. And like the eyes are just like so wide and like.
Yeah. Still, I'm looking at that right now.
Yeah, I just want a shirt with Mo with Santa's little helper in his left arm and then Robin's nest on top of his head. Maybe in the background have like a lightning storm. Just how depressed Mo is. And like maybe just a word that's saying happy birthday.
I like that.
Or world's greatest poet. I don't know.
Yeah. Mine is also kind of a high concept Mo shirt. And it's him in the pond shooting the geese. And it says Mo Sizlak shooting geese and making peace.
That's a great catchphrase. That's a great tattoo, actually. It had like that wraparound like ribbon, like tattoo.
Yeah, kind of like Bart got with the moth.
Moth. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about quotes here? What was one of your favorite? Well,
there are quite a few for me. The Gore Vidal, just like 1876 is what I paid for gas one time. And Burr, I read on an Eskimo Pie wrapper. That's really funny to me. All the J.J. Jameson stuff is amazing.
The Franzine and Chabon.
Yeah, I thought they were fun. And honestly, Tom Wolfe, everything that he did was really good. Like, I thought he performed really well. We've talked about it before where some guest stars kind of phone it in. I feel like all of the guest stars were really, really game and like had a lot of fun with it. And I really appreciated that.
Thinking about one of the most recent episodes we did where they went to England and they had like five guest stars or whatever. And it sounded very like, even though Ian McKellen, like example, is one of them, is one of the greatest actors. You could just like tell he like went in there, read those lines as a Shakespearean actor that he is in one take, was like in and out, like much like that scene in like Krusty recording the lines for the doll.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I think all the writers had such a fun time because they don't really get to do things like this.
Yeah.
They're not asked to. So I think that's kind of a cool thing with these famous American authors getting to poke fun at themselves and getting to play in this part and to play with these toys, you know, like it was exciting for them. And I think it's kind of a fun aspect. So yeah, I really enjoyed all of the authors in this episode. That's one of my favorite guests.
Yeah. I mean, I think my MBJ probably has to be J. Jonah Jameson just because he's so good. But I mean, I don't know. I really like the Homer poem. That was really funny.
Don't forget, I think it has to be Abe Simpson too, talking about Hitler.
Oh yeah, almost forgot about that. Like, there's not like a really weak spot of this episode. I think that the Rhode Island joke is probably like the stinker.
Sure.
But everything else is pretty solid.
Wait a minute. Uh-oh. Hey, what are you saying about that Rhode Island joke?
Sorry, Peter. I just said that things from Rhode Island aren't funny.
My wife's head looks like a penis.
Yes. I never thought about that.
Look at it in a silhouette.
Well, now you ruined Family Guy for me.
Hey, I'm here to help.
Thank you.
Okay, even the beginning, like the crab thing is kind of dumb, but also kind of enjoyable because that's how crabs.
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah, let's just get down to it. I'll say that this was a very joke heavy episode. I love that Barney also knows who Tom Wolfe is and all of his works. That's a great another line. Don't forget, was it Lenny or Carl who said, like, oh, just think America's newest poet or whatever, clean up my barf an hour ago.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to get to is that I feel like this is a joke heavy episode, but the story is just, it's one of those, like, I think we talked about last week when we spun for this episode, like, oh, Mo or Lisa has to help Mo bring out his inner poet. Like, that sounds like something that we would pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely does, like, but I think that was the pitch. And they did such a good job of making jokes around that silly pitch of, like, Mo and Lisa, you know, hooking up,
yeah, pairing up. Because, yeah, I mean, this is in a way just a retread of Flaming Mo.
Yeah.
In a way, because it's Mo taking credit for somebody else's discovery. That being said, this episode just works really well, I think. There are so many jokes into it, and it's just so silly that I can forgive maybe the plot not being so original, but it flows really well, too.
Yeah. Even just like little things, like for character wise, like Bart, like caring about his sister. You even feel kind of like sadness too in the beginning with like Mo, like sitting there waiting mm-hmm. for the Simpsons or Homer to show up to go fishing. There's some good work here. Like animation wise, everything is kind of like, it's good. It's a, I think we've talked about it before, like a palate cleanser, or just like, let's say you're having a bad day at work.
Yeah.
Wife's getting you down. There's one place where you can go where everybody knows your name. And since it's COVID, you can't go to cheer. So stay home and watch this episode of The Simpsons.
That's a really nice thing.
I think that is for me too, like watching this episode, like just taking my mind off of things for, you know, a good 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Even though if I don't know all the literary references, because I'm not as learned as you, Steve, I still had fun with it.
I've read one of the authors and I tried to read the other one. Oh. I tried to read the other one and I just couldn't, either because I'm too dumb or it wasn't good, but... Oprah said it was good, so what do I know?
Hey, at least they put in American authors, but they also put in a Spider-Man reference for people like me who just read comic books. So
exactly.
It's well-rounded. Let's just say that.
Yeah, and I think that's what's what really makes The Simpsons at its core really great is that mix of high and low art.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is achieves it really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are your final rating thoughts?
So, you know, Mo's a poet in this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did some research here on something called Bing.com.
Mm-hmm.
So the longest poem in the English language was written by Nigel Tom. It's T-O-M-M, so I'm assuming it's Tom.
Tom.
Anyways, it's 23,161 lines.
Wow.
And the poem's called My Blah Story. Go look it up, Steve. I don't want to read it because it's literally like, I read a little bit of it. It's just like, so then she's like, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Like, literally, that's what it is. Yeah. You're looking it up right now. You don't need to.
Yeah.
So 23,161 lines. I'm going to give this episode 19,420.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. So I think that roughly comes to 83%. Sure. Why not?
Okay. Well, I did some deep research of my own, and I went to target.com and I looked up a wide ruled composition notebook, and the wide ruled composition notebook has 80 pages.
All right.
And of those 80 pages, also, it's a steal at 50 cents.
Yeah, those are cheap. They're great.
Yeah. I'm partial to college ruled, but still, 80 pages. Of those 80 pages, I'm going to give this 70 out of 80.
Well, according to my math there, it's a 1.1428574. Oh, I think I did this wrong, Steve.
Well, either way, it's a resounding good grade from me.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, this is just a silly, fun, well-rounded, jokey episode that I highly recommend. It's like, I really like what you said. Like, if you're having a bad day, or if you just needed an escape from all that's going on, this is a good one to check out.
Yeah, it's not up there with, like, I'm going to say, in like the top 10 Simpsons of all time. I wouldn't even say it's the top 10 of our podcasts, but I enjoyed it. Like, there wasn't anything offensive except for, of course, the Rhode Island joke. Sorry, Rhode Islanders. And maybe little people, too.
Sure.
But yeah, it's fun. Just take an edible, watch this episode.
Yep, that's the Annoyed Grunt Boy's stance is do drugs, watch The Simpsons.
That's right. Hey, let's take another edible and find out what we're watching next week.
Alrighty, and to do that, we're going to need some weed, and we're also going to need that Wheel of Random. All right, let's spin it to see what season we are in. Ba-doop.
Don't. All right, we have season 31. Wow.
Season 31. Wow. All righty, let's spin it again to see what episode we're watching.
We have episode 17.
Season 31, episode 17. Why, that's Highway to Well. What happens in that, Craig?
Maggie goes to preschool. Oh. So Marge decides to get... Wait, Maggie goes to preschool. She's only like zero.
I know.
Is that an age?
Yeah, zero is the number.
Yeah. Anyway, so Marge decides to get a job to pass the time and ends up working in an upscale weed dispensary. Wow. Speaking of weed, Homer decides to open his own dispensary that mimics a sketchy drug deal, putting their two businesses at odds.
Oh.
Steve, when did this air?
This aired March 22nd, 2020.
That was the beginning of lockdown, really, right?
It really was, yeah.
Everyone was locked down, probably watching The Simpsons, smoking weed.
Yeah, it was like, oh, this is what we're going to do for the next 2 weeks.
Yep, next 2 weeks, we're just going to stay home. The government's going to give us some money, provisions maybe. And this is New Zealand, right?
Exactly, yeah, we're in New Zealand, and so we'll get over it, and everything will be fine. Yeah. We'll be going to concerts.
I love our Prime Minister, Jacinda.
It's great to have a strong woman running the country.
Yeah. Anyways, this episode was written by Caroline Omine.
Oh, we've talked about her before. She's great.
And Chris Clements was the director. I probably do remember this episode because it was like locked down and what else are you going to do?
Yeah, I think I remember seeing it, but I do need to revisit it because I don't remember it that
well. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm excited to watch this episode with you next week.
Indeed.
And until then, you can check out our TeePublic site, which is teepublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys. And hey, hit us up on the social medias. Why don't you? We got Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat.
Yeah, we'll say
Twitter.
Snapchat.
Twitter at 138Simpsons.
And you can always email us at 138Simpsons@gmail.com. And if you're so kind, go to your favorite podcatching app and leave a 5-star review. But you don't need to write a real review. You can just write your favorite Thomas Wolfe novel or just ask us a question or whatever.
All right. For this week, I've been half an annoyed grunt boy, Craig.
And I've been your other half an annoyed grunt boy, Steve.
And remember, keep reaching for the skis.
My tooth aches from chewing.